Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started. You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go. It's our number 2. Live in Los Angeles, it's The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1, Trent Williams, going to be a first ballot Hall of Fame tackle for the 49ers on today. Mark Sanchez, Kevin Clark of The Ringer is going to be joining me in about 5 minutes. Joy Taylor, he's here, of course. So when we do The Herd hierarchy, it is not just based on they won, they lost. I have moved teams up for losing depending on the loss. Was it a road loss? Did you overcome a bunch? Just because you win, if you barely beat a crappy team, Tennessee beat the Jets in overtime. That following week, I didn't like Tennessee. So it's not one of these, you won. That's why I could never be a college football pollster. Because I think Michigan was better than Michigan State. Michigan State beat them, but I had no problem Michigan being ahead of Michigan State.
Yeah, that would not go over well with college football fans.
Yeah, watch Michigan against Ohio State this weekend, competitive. Did you see Ohio State and Michigan State? Not remotely competitive.
No.
Sometimes the better team doesn't win. So it's called the Herd Hierarchy. Here we go.
Herd Hierarchy.
Time is now. Let's go.
The top 10 NFL teams according to college. Number 10.
We said a week ago, this is going to be a playoff team. People just don't realize it yet. The Minnesota Vikings, 9 of their 10 games have been decided by one possession. They've only given the ball away 6 times this year, fewest in the NFL. They do not beat themselves. They also lead the NFL in sack differential. They get to your quarterback and you don't get to theirs. Now, are they limited athletically at quarterback? Yes. Is Mike Zimmer too conservative for my taste as a play caller or a defensive head coach? Yes. But this is a playoff team, and a playoff team that will, I believe, beat somebody when they get there.
Number 9.
The Colts. The Colts are the other team that are not in the playoffs as of now, but I said last week that is a playoff team. They've won 5 of 6. They just routed Buffalo. You know, Carson Wentz and the Colts, when they went out and spent that money, 99% of you ripped the Colts for the Carson Wentz move. You were wrong. We were right. 6-2 in his last 8 games with 15 touchdowns and a passer rating over 102. Wentz had multiple elusive moves this weekend. He's a gamer. He's a leader. He's got a little Andrew Luck in him, and I like the Colts at 9.
Number 8.
Rams barely. Listen. Bye week, and they go to Green Bay. If they lose, they're out. I think they'll win. Only beaten one winning team this year, but it was Tampa. But here's the thing, and this matters. They lead the NFL in yards per play. They're very explosive. They have an excellent coach, above average offensive line, and 4 or 5 elite playmakers. And Stafford leads the NFL with 4 games over 300 yards passing and 3 touchdown passes or more. So it's dynamic. It's explosive. They're a little rudderless right now. I think they'll get it back. They got to run the football a little more consistently. I have the Rams at 8.
Number 7.
But the Titans beat them, so I have the Titans at 7. Here's my issue. They're not the same team without Derrick Henry. He's been gone for a couple games. So the 3 games without Derrick Henry, you know what they're averaging? 290 yards offense. They're not the same team. And Tannehill, what worries me, is now taking more and more sacks because they're now throwing on 3rd and long and 2nd and long because they don't have Derrick Henry. And Tannehill now, it's not a great offensive line. But they're well coached. I still think on most Sundays they can play with anybody. Titans 7.
Number 6.
But they're not as dynamic as the Cowboys, who with Pollard and Zeke have a real rushing attack. Now, Dallas has lost 2 of 3 games. And Dak was sacked the season high 5 times against the Chiefs. But let's be honest, our big concern about Dallas is Mike McCarthy's clock management and Tyron Smith at left tackle. If Tyron Smith is healthy, this team has a chance to get to the NFC Championship. That's an if, but I don't take this little road bump, speed bump right now. Don't get too worked up. Dax never played well without Tyron Smith and Amari Cooper. He's getting them back.
Number 5.
The Chiefs. Maybe a little low. I don't think their offense is quite as explosive as it needs to be, but with Chris Jones back and playing the right position, Kansas City's back in the Super Bowl hunt. They have the number two scoring defense, and some of that is, you know, they play the Giants and they play Jordan Love, so I don't want to go crazy on that. But if you watch them, Honey Badger's healthy, Chris Jones, Frank Clark, the offense isn't the story. The story right now is situationally, they're a very good defensive team with a very aggressive defensive coordinator, and I like where they're at.
Number four.
New England's defense is the best in the league. Their coach is the best in the league. Their special teams are arguably best in the league. They've held four of their last five opponents under 14 points. They have the best points differential. They have the number one scoring defense. They are not dynamic offensively. They need to grind you down, and that's why I only have them at four. But if I said to you that there's this team, run the football, best defense, best coach in the league, and excellent special teams, does it sound like a top four team in the league? In 2021, it is.
Number three.
Tampa Bay, basically, because I think Tampa and Brady would beat Mac Jones and New England if they met. That's the only reason I have Tampa at three. I don't think Tampa's ceiling's as high as we think. They are very good at home, where they play the Super Bowl, 5-0 this year. And Brady has taken the fewest sacks in the league. This is the underrated part of Tampa. We said this last year by the end of the year. This is a really good offensive line. Jensen, the center, Allie Maypart, well, worse. It's three of their five offensive linemen of note are like Pro Bowl level guys. So Brady just doesn't get hit. Brady's got time to throw. I do not think they have a higher ceiling offensively. I think what you saw last night, kind of what they are, but I have them at three.
Number two.
Arizona. Arizona just won in San Francisco and Seattle with Colt McCoy. And not just one, had like 400 yards plus. This team has got a good locker room. Zach Ertz, boy, what a pickup that was. He walked right in as a veteran tight end. He's been great for them. They'll get healthy with Kyler Murray coming back. But I think this team right now is an NFC championship team.
Number one.
I know what you're saying, but Green Bay beat them, missing 11 starters. I am blown away by Green Bay. No team in this league could be missing David Bakhtiari, Alan Lazard, Robert Tonyan, Aaron Jones, Rashawn Gary, Za'Darius Smith, Jair Alexander, and drop 31 against the Vikings, beat Arizona without 11 starters. Is everybody paying attention to Green Bay's defense? They're missing their top linebacker and their top corner, and it's hard to move the ball on them. This is the best Green Bay team totally since the Super Bowl. People are not paying attention because they are so decimated with injuries. Arizona's missing their quarterback and winning. Green Bay's missing seven starters, high-end starters, and is wildly functional and beat Arizona in Arizona. I think Green Bay's the best team in the league. In fact, what is your number one complaint today? Mason Crosby. That's it. Nothing else I worry about. When they get going and I get Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon, Za'Darius back, Jair Alexander back, Bakhtiari back. This is the best roster to me in the NFL. That's why I say with Aaron, be very careful, Aaron. Be very careful going to other teams. This is a really good Packer roster. All right, let's bring in Kevin Clark of The Ringer. He's very good. Slow News Day podcast as well, joining us live. All right, so there's my top 10. What did you make? Anything jump out to you as egregiously off?
No, I think that in a weird way, we still might, and you made the point, not be talking about the Patriots enough, considering what they've done with Mac Jones so early, the fact that Bill Belichick is the best coach of all time. I completely agree about Arizona, too, and I completely agree about the Packers. I mean, this is a league right now where there's more games being decided on the last play of the game than ever in history. And Sunday was just one of those weird days. Kevin King is bad. We knew that already. And they're probably still my Super Bowl favorite.
You know, the Mac Jones thing is fascinating because it's very easy in hindsight to go, oh, I can't believe Chicago took this guy or San Francisco took this guy. But there's an argument to be made that Mac was perfect because they've had Mac before. Like, right? Like, he is probably not nearly as successful as he would be in New England, right?
100%. I mean, here's the thing, is we keep comparing Mac Jones to a young Tom Brady, and people are kind of misunderstanding that. And they're saying, we think that Mac Jones is going to be the best quarterback of all time. He can play until he's 44. No, he's just doing what he's supposed to do. Right now, the Patriots are majoring in easy throws. They're leading the NFL in out routes thrown. They're leading the NFL in running back screen. They're making life easy for Mac Jones. If you want to see the clearest sign that life is not fair, look at the path of rookie quarterbacks and young quarterbacks. Some teams have Andy Reid, some teams have Bill Belichick, and some have Matt Nagy. And where you go, it determines 80% of this thing. And right now, the Patriots understand they're a running team. They show the same type of personnel right now as San Francisco and Baltimore. They want to be a heavy, physical team. They are making life really easy for Mac Jones. If you look at it, he's on pace to break Dak Prescott's rookie completion percentage record. He's the only quarterback right now who is a rookie who's had one game over 100 rating. He's had five. Wow. Everybody else is at zero. That's what you need to know about the destinations that these guys had this year and why Belichick was perfect for Mac Jones and vice versa.
Okay, Joy and I only have two or three rules on the show. One of them, newly established this year, was I'm giving Daniel Jones till Thanksgiving, and then I'm making a decision. And I made my decision last night, and my theory is it can't be this hard. They've got Galladay and the kid out of Florida and Saquon Barkley and Evan Ingram and Darius Slayton. I mean, I'm not saying it's the Chiefs, but I watch it and I'm like, it can't be this hard. I think it's time to get into the big boy adult free agent trade sweepstakes for quarterbacks. Your thought on Daniel Jones?
So there's a couple things. Number one is when you look at the stats, the guys he's with right now are the rookies, and he's not getting better at all. He's playing like a rookie, and he's not a rookie. He's in his third year, which even if you were giving the most charitable definition and saying, hey, the new NFL is weird, you got to give these guys time, last year was weird, whatever, the excuses are over. He has 65 fumbles since the beginning of 2019, okay? He turns the ball over more than anybody in football. But more than that, Colin, he doesn't have any upside. Josh Allen is just a little bit below that in the turnover department. But Josh Allen has these highs that are almost indescribable and incalculable and something we've never even seen before. What is Daniel Jones doing when he's just playing okay? He doesn't play well from a clean pocket. There's just nothing where you say, okay, if we just get this out of his game, he'll be fine. He's just bad. There are no excuses for him. As you said, Kadarius Toney's there. Kenny Galladay is there. He's out of Evan Ingram. There are no built-in excuses here except that he's a bad quarterback. Dave Gettleman totally misplayed it. They could have gotten a guy like Brian Burns with that pick, Rashawn Gary with that pick. Instead, they overreached, made up a story that a bunch of teams were going to draft him at 8 or 9 or 10 if they didn't get him at 6. That was proven to be false. It was one of the worst draft picks maybe of the last decade.
So I want to talk to you about, there's a story out about Matt Nagy, and whether, I can't confirm it, but it would not be unrealistic to think the Bears, for the first time ever, are going to fire a coach in a season. Yeah. So he got Trubisky to the playoffs twice. He's never been under 500. But there are moments in time when, if you're on the fence, there are other factors which weigh in.
Yeah.
This is a very good year for young, smart offensive coordinators on the market. Bieniemy didn't get a job, so he's there. Leftwich, Brian Daboll, Eberflus. So it's a very good year for highly competent coordinators. And it's not always the case. The second thing is, Denver, if they got off Vic Fangio, to me, that's the best roster. That would be the best job. But they're going to give him, because they're still viable, months. And if the Bears move off Nagy now and get into the search, they could have 6 to 7 week advantage and get the best coach available. So, like, to me, I like Nagy, but my takeaway is you may have to consider big market for coordinators, beat Denver to the punch, because that's a better job, in my opinion, with a better GM. So let's just start with the base of this. Do you agree if they move off Nagy, and who would you go get and why?
Wow. So I don't know if that report is accurate either. Matt Nagy says it's not. I hope it's accurate. And the only disappointing part of it, Colin, is they didn't do it after last week's game or the game before that, because it's over. It's over. It's the end of an era. I think that I was looking at the stats earlier this morning. Justin Fields' passer rating when pressured this year is under 40. What are we doing? How are we maximizing it? And the thing that disappoints me is kind of the geography is destiny thing I was talking about a minute ago. Like, there are so many quarterbacks who get to be 34, 35, and I say, hey, what went wrong in your career? Why are you on your fourth team? And oftentimes it's because they went to a bad situation early. and owner didn't realize they needed to make a move or whatever it was, but there were mistakes made early. And Justin Fields is the type of guy who deserves a great coach. I'm looking at a guy like a Kellen Moore who could maximize that. I'm with you on Brian Daboll. We've seen everything he's done with Josh Allen. It's been incredible. Eric Bieniemy. There are so many guys out there who can maximize a young quarterback. Matt Nagy's had his chance. He can't do it. It's time for somebody who can.
Finally, I'm often critical of Baker, so I like asking other people their opinion. I defended him this morning. I said, listen, you folks were too high on him early, and now you're too brutal. A kid's falling apart. I mean, the heel, knee, labrum, shoulder. I would sit him. They have a bye after this week. So I would sit him. And then I'd bring him in and get a fair evaluation for the last five. They get the Ravens at home. They get the Raiders at home. They get the Bengals at home. A Steeler winnable game. Probably don't win at Lambeau. But I believe, honestly, I never saw him as a number one pick. But ripping him now seems unjust. He is falling apart. And I think you sit him for the Ravens, let Keenum play, you bring him back. Because not only do you want to win, but you need a fair evaluation. And I don't think you can evaluate him right now. Your takeaway on what to do with Baker.
I was thinking about this morning. Has there ever been a harder evaluation with the stakes ever? Because they're going into a contract negotiation, and the going rate for somebody like Baker Mayfield is well over $30 million. So this is a guy who we already had questions about his long-term viability in Cleveland. We already, you know, sort of we're wondering, is he on that Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson kind of value plane? I don't think he is. But now he hasn't been healthy all year. He's 25th in the NFL in performance from a clean pocket, which to me means he's just missing throws. He's missing open receivers. He's not seeing open receivers. But there's so much that goes along with that right now that I don't want to be Andrew Berry right now. Andrew Berry a couple of years ago said to me, actually, one of the Cleveland radio guys actually brought this up to me the other day. They said that if you don't have the quarterback position, Andrew Berry said, if you don't have the quarterback position in place, your entire franchise is stuck in neutral. And that's kind of what I feel like with the Browns right now. Now, he wasn't talking about Baker specifically, but now he might be because this is neutral. This is the definition of neutral. I agree with you. Baker should not be playing. They should try to get him healthy and get a true evaluation and just figure out in the last 5 weeks what they have. But right now, this is a nightmare of a contract negotiations for both sides because Baker's going to lose money. We don't know his value on the open market. This is so, so tough. I don't think there's ever been a harder decision about a quarterback in the kind of mega contract era than what the Browns have right now and the way Baker Mayfield's playing.
Kevin Clark, The Ringer, host of the Slow News Day podcast, which is always a hoot. Good seeing you, buddy.
Anytime, Colin.
You bet. Yeah, if you got a couple things working for Cleveland, you got to get a fair evaluation on him. Because I've said with Baker, you got to consider everything. Going after Deshaun and bringing Baker back. Got to consider everything. Well, you can't get a fair evaluation now. You have this is, I mean, you watched him against Detroit. He's throwing the ball 8-10 yards over open people. That's not who he is. That's who he is with a bad heel, can't push off, and is overcompensating.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Saturday, there's games, and then there's the game. It's the latest chapter in college football's ultimate rivalry. Number 4 Ohio State faces number 6 Michigan in the Big Noon Saturday game of the week. Coverage begins at 10 Eastern with Big Noon kickoff live from Ann Arbor. And then it's the game Saturday on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
It's a big one. I think it's going to be pretty close. Michigan State secondary was the weakness of their team, so that was predictable. Maybe not that score. I also think it's hard to get young kids to play great football back-to-back weeks. And Ohio State played their best game in a long time. They'll come down a little. I think Michigan's underrated. I think it's close, but I'll take the Buckeyes. By the way, this Black Friday experience, the magic of a great night's rest with Casper. Limited time, 20% off their sale. Go to casper.com/promo for details. Joy Taylor with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Breaking news. That's what you get on this show.
Yeah.
The New York Daily News just reported that the Giants are firing offensive coordinator Jason Garrett after 26 games in New York, according to a source. Freddie Kitchens will be replacing him for the remainder of the season.
Now, it's easy to snicker, but what if Freddie is a really good coordinator, just not a coach?
Well, didn't Freddie I want to go back and look at his ascension in Cleveland's, but
he was the coordinator. And I think wasn't he the OC and Baker was having good numbers, and then he got moved in because nobody wanted to screw with Baker.
In 2018, he was the associate head coach and running backs coach. And then he was the offensive coordinator, and then he was the head coach.
And I think when Baker was playing well, that's why they gave him the head coaching job. I do not think every two is a one. And I think, like, I'll give you an example. I think Jason Garrett's a better one than a two. I don't think he's a clever schemer, but I think he's a good walk-around guy. He's respected. He's likable. He's smart. But I don't think you can put him in a Kyle Shanahan McVay class as a schemer. Mm-hmm. Pete Carroll, I think, is an excellent walk-around guy, but I don't think he's known for schemes. That's what they've always said about Urban Meyer. Good recruiter, good motivator, but he's not a – is he a brilliant schemer? Freddie Kitchens, I think, is pretty good with schemes, but he doesn't have the gravitas to be the guy. He's a vice president.
No, he's not a head coach. But he's not going to be a head coach here because Joe Judge is the head coach. But he'll be taking over the play calling with Jason Garrett gone. The Giants are 3-7. They rank dead last in the NFL with 42 offensive touchdowns since the start of the 2020 season when Garrett arrived after being fired from the Cowboys. They are 31st in points and yards per game, and they're 25th in points this since Garrett took over, and they're 25th in points and 23rd in yards per game this season.
Yeah.
And Monday night's loss against Tampa saw the lowest in points, yards, first downs, and time of possession. They were also 1-9 on third down. So, yes, like 26 games at this point, if you can't get the offense going. To Nick's point earlier, you can't do this. Like, you have to have something going on the offensive side of the ball at some point. And that performance last night was just – I'm not even going to put it all on Daniel Jones. Like, I don't know if Daniel Jones is the guy, but you've got to be more creative than that and get something
going.
Well,
I mean, the GM can't draft an offensive line. The coordinator, Jason Garrett, can't create creativity. And Daniel Jones is not gifted enough behind a bad O-line and lack of creativity to make anything happen.
Right.
So, and you can't fire Daniel Jones today, but you can get rid of your GM and your coordinator pretty soon.
Well, Courtland Sutton and the Broncos didn't wait until the offseason to work out a new contract. It was reported that he has agreed to a four-year extension with the team. The deal is worth $60.8 million with $34.9 million guaranteed. He was a second-round pick in 2018, had a breakout year in 2019. His tore his ACL in week one of last year, but came back this season and has had 43 catches for 672 yards and two touchdowns in 10 games. They also signed a wide receiver, Tim Patrick, to a three-year extension last week. So they have their top three wideouts, including Jerry Jeudy, locked up for the next few years. We keep talking about the Broncos being the Bucks of last year when Tom Brady went there.
Like really good personnel.
Broncos being a team that has some things set up. They have the 19th ranked offensive line heading into week 11, according to Pro Football Focus. They're 14th in pass blocking and 23rd in run blocking.
I think it's the weakness of their team. I think they can be better on the offensive line, but it's a very good year for like interior offensive linemen. They've got their picks. I do think they're Tampa before Brady. I like Peyton, their GM. I like their playmakers on the outside. They've locked them up. They need a coach and a quarterback. They went defense, so you know they're going to move to offense. They're going to hire an offensive guy. I wouldn't be surprised. This could be Bieniemy or Brian Daboll, but I think they're ready to pop. I really do.
They also have 9 picks in the draft. They have 3 picks in the first 2 rounds and 5 picks in the first 3 rounds.
I'll guarantee. When's their first pick? Because I'll give you.
I don't have that. What,
middle of the first round? I would go get that center from Iowa. I think they need an anchor in the middle of their offensive line.
And then they'll have to bring in or trade up and get a quarterback, but this isn't the strongest quarterback class, so bring in a veteran guy that's ready to win right now. They're 5-5. They're last in the AFC West, which is obviously a very tough division, and they host the Chargers on Sunday.
I would if the allegations against Deshaun Watson over the next 6 months can be cleared. I mean, March is free agency. They're probably not going to get Russell Wilson. Ciara's not going to be big in the Rocky Mountains. And I don't think Aaron Rodgers will leave. I think you have to go big. If I'm Deshaun Watson and I want to reboot things, that offense is – they got two good backs. They are ready to win games.
And they have, as I started talking about, they have their wide receiving core locked up. And if you look at the Buccaneers, they had weapons. You look at the Cowboys, they have weapons. You look at these teams that are putting up these numbers and winning. That's what they have to offer. Now – I don't know what the situation is going to be with the trade, obviously, but we know San Francisco is going to be moving off of Jimmy Garoppolo. Could be an interesting place for him.
I don't like the health.
But we know that that's what comes with Jimmy Garoppolo. So Browns fans have booed Baker Mayfield multiple times in the second half of Sunday's 13-10 victory over the winless Lions. And Baker talked a little bit about it.
Oh, boy.
I'd be the first to tell you I played like so it's not about accountable. And I don't owe you guys any of that. I owe that to my teammates and I talk to them. So that's what matters.
Baker, what did you make of some of the booing there in the second half from the fans?
Those are probably the same fans that won't be quiet while we're on offense and trying to operate. So don't really care.
You know, I don't buy the person who always says nothing bothers me, don't really care.
It's projecting. It means everything bothers you.
It's generally, yes. Like, things bother you. It's human. It's okay to be bothered by stuff.
Who wants to be booed at home? It's terrible.
My thing is this. I think I'm starting to come over to your side with the franchise quarterback behavior thing. Like, I've been a big defender of Baker. I do think he stabilized the organization that was terrible for two decades. There is some value to him there. It's a horrible situation to be in with the contract because he's clearly lost money, as Kevin Clark just mentioned earlier. He's lost money. You can't pay him Patrick Mahomes money. Is he the future? What other options are out there? Who? No one's going to ask for a trade to Cleveland. So how do you move forward in this situation? He's obviously banged up, which it doesn't give you, you don't get any benefit of doubt. If you're on the field, you got to play. Like that's how this league is. Whether it's fair or not, you're going to be evaluated in that way. You're healthy enough to play, so you have to perform. Now they got the win. So at the end of the day, it does how you looked against the Lions. The Lions have played a lot of teams tough this year. So there's no shame in that to me, but it's how you looked while you were playing. Well, he's injured. Okay, well, he's out there. So talking about the fans booing you and like saying they're the same ones that won't stay quiet, like you don't know the media anything, right? You don't respect the fans, who, by the way, are great fans, have gone to games and supported this team through decades of incompetence, well before you got there. I just don't get it. Like, what is the value of being antagonistic in this situation? Everyone knows you're injured, but that's what it is. If this is the league, everyone is injured all the time. Tom Brady played with a bad knee all year last season. We didn't even know about it until the end of the season.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Baker tends to be somebody that is he likes conflict. He creates it. So he needs therapy. He probably has got too much kind of man stuff to acknowledge that he needs to sit down and work some of this stuff out with a professional. So in the process, this is Cleveland who you got. I defended him earlier today and will defend him one more time today. But this is who I always saw, somebody that's in constant conflict. And I do think as a face of a franchise, you got to step to the mic sometimes and just eat it. Brady spent 20 years just eating problems. Go yell, argue with a therapist or your wife or your kids. But sometimes you just have to go, your fans have a right to do whatever they want and not win the press conference.
Yeah, it does. It feels like
he's always got to win it.
He's always got to win the argument and win the situation.
It's a maturity thing. It's
talk just, all about how like you don't care and you don't care. Like
you care a lot.
You keep telling me you don't care. Tell me once you don't care. Okay, I believe you.
But there's every
week. There's things I genuinely don't care about. Doesn't bother me. But you got to constantly keep telling me you don't care. Like, I think maybe you care a little bit. And you should never take shots at fans. Let the fans, unless they're doing something that is, you know, malice in the palace or throwing things at people or something like that, you should never take shots at fans. The fans are the lifeblood of this entire operation, everything we do here. And those fans have dealt with a lot over a long period of time. They deserve to boo if they want to.
Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Live
Coming
news.
Up next, what I'm about to say is either great news or terrible news, depending on what NFL franchise you are.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sportsbook, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Order Jersey Mike's on your mobile app. I did 15 seconds. Get delivery to your door or Saturday's free game day delivery when you order through Jersey Mike's app. Jersey Mike's, be a sub above. Trent Williams, great left tackle for the San Francisco 49ers, will be joining us next hour, as will Mark Sanchez for the final half hour of our show. Good to have you in. So we all know what's happening with football. We've all watched it. We know the rules have all moved to benefit not only offenses, but quarterbacks. Jerry Jones was really the first on this about 10 years ago, where Jerry Jones went to the commissioner and he said, our number one assets are quarterbacks. We've got to create rules so they're not hurt. The NFL historically has gone to quarterbacks when asking about footballs. Do you want them softer? Do you want them harder? What are the inflation point? So we know that quarterbacks are the most marketable. They're the highest paid. You can't win with a bad one. But over the course of the last half decade, everything has worked in their favor. Can't hit him. I mean, you've seen the rules this year. You can brush a quarterback. It is a penalty in a game where you tackle people. So they are protected by the league. It's a better league when starting quarterbacks are upright and throwing touchdowns. Here's what's discouraging for the 8 to 9 teams that don't have a quarterback. If you look at the current AFC and NFC standings, with only one exception, the best two quarterbacks in order lead the division. So right now, AFC East, there is no question that Josh Allen and Mac Jones are the two best quarterbacks in that division. In the AFC North, Lamar Jackson and Joe Burrow right now are the two best quarterbacks in that division. Sorry, Ben's old and Baker's lost and beaten up. Right now in the AFC South, Wentz and Tannehill are the two best quarterbacks in that division. The AFC West, I don't think we doubt that Mahomes is the best and Justin Herbert's a really, really talented number two. You go to the NFC. Dak Prescott is the best quarterback in that division, and it is no longer, at least in my opinion, disputable. Jalen Hurts is certainly the second most productive. Say what you want. I was a doubter, but the dude gets you to 30 points a lot. The next division, Aaron Rodgers is the most gifted. And again, Kirk Cousins, I think, is top three in the league in passer rating. He bores me to death. I don't trust him in big games. But you can't deny he's a top 12, 15 quarterback in the league. It's silly. The only exception is the NFC South, where Brady, the best quarterback, leads. And I would argue there is no other elite quarterback right now in that division. Matt Ryan's going to get replaced within a year. Cam's making a second run, but he's older. And Trevor Siemian's a backup. But if you go to the NFC West, it's Kyler Murray and Matt Stafford having the two best years. Now, the argument is Russell Wilson should be up there. But right now, whether it's Pete Carroll, O-line, schemes, or injury, Russell Wilson is not a top two quarterback in that division. He's not. He's hurt. He's inaccurate. It's not working. So except for the NFC South, first, second place team, in some order, it's all quarterback. So if you don't get the quarterback right, rest of this stuff is nonsense. It doesn't matter. That's why in Cleveland, you got to rest Baker for a couple of weeks and get a fair evaluation on him. You can wrongly evaluate every position in this league. You got to get the quarterback right. You have to get it right. By the way, this is also why Jason Garrett got fired today. The reason Jason Garrett got fired, because they want to see Daniel Jones with a second coordinator. Let's give him Freddie Kitchens for 7 weeks. Is there light here? That's why they're doing that now with Jason Garrett, because they want another evaluation. The first half until Thanksgiving, the evaluation of Daniel Jones is he's not our guy. So they have to figure out in the next 6 or 7 games, do we go after Russ? Do we go after Aaron? Do we go after Deshaun? So that's why the Giants are doing this. Let's give him another offensive coordinator who worked with Baker. If he can't get to Baker's level, we got to move off quarterback. That's why they're doing that now today. Joe Judge isn't going to get fired either way. He's not going to get fired if he fires Jason or if he retains him. What they've got to figure out is the quarterback. That's why moving off Jason Garrett's not a bad move, and I like Jason. I've talked to Jason. I like him. But it's the right move right now. So it's not a great quarterback draft class, but it is a remarkably interesting quarterback potential free agent class or trade class with Russell, Aaron, and Deshaun Watson. So I was thinking about this, and we asked Nick Wright about this, about the LeBron, you know, one game suspension. He and Isaiah Stewart, you know, fight a little bit. And one of the things that jumps out to me with LeBron is how rare this is. So he's been playing for like 17 years. He doesn't get in fights. And he called Stewart to apologize. Here's something really important, and I've watched the NBA for 40 years. So there's a lot of things happening here, but LeBron hated to be the villain in Miami. He doesn't like being hated, and he doesn't get into fights ever, despite being physically imposing. And in the 80s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, a lot of our alpha players would get into fights. Karl Malone, Larry Bird, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, Isaiah Thomas, Charles Barkley. They were fighters. They get after you. They were physical. They were confrontational. And why? Because years ago in the NBA, everybody was fighting for a piece of the pie. Nobody was getting $150 million on shoes. The salaries weren't big. Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson were making like $1 million a year. You were fighting not only for wins, but for a piece of the financial pie. But over the last 20 years in the NBA, two or three things have happened. Number one, everybody gets rich. Marginal players get rich. Number two is, it's a more comfortable league. Everybody's got a team plane. Started with the Mavericks years ago, Mark Cuban, about 20 years ago. Everybody's got a team plane. It's very much a comfort league. And number three is, they took out hand checking. They took out a lot of the physicality. So it is a, and the league also simultaneously became a very European league. There's a lot of great European players. Well, what is European basketball known for? A lot of skill, kind of soft. Fair or not, that's the label. And so I look at LeBron James in this incident, and I think, God, this is the first time in 17 years he's been in this, because he is really at the forefront generationally of a league change. I can name names when Ken Bannister of the Knicks is getting into a fight at the Garden. This was a much more common occurrence, not necessarily malice in the palace, but a lot of fights. And I can remember as a kid, Dennis Autry of the Sonics, and you'd get fights and Vernon Maxwell's in the stands, and because the league finally looked at it, and we have more Euros, more skill-based rules to take the physicality out of it. And LeBron has been, to me, part of this generation. You don't want to be a villain. You don't want to get in fights. You don't want to play that way. So I think basketball has benefited from it. Years ago, it's amazing. They do 30 for 30s on the Knicks and the Pacers series, the Spike Lee series. 8 of the 10 starters couldn't hit a jumper. The skill level in the NBA, we romanticize how great the NBA was. The skill level compared to today was pathetic. It was like weak. Guy, nobody could hit a three-pointer. You couldn't depend on those glamorous Knicks teams. I mean, could anybody hit a 23-footer? John Starks was a guard. He couldn't shoot. So the league has never been more finesse, but it's never been more skilled. It's never been more based on everybody can dribble, everybody can move up the floor, you can't press anybody, everybody can pass. Now you got centers who are the best passer on a team. I think the NBA's never been better. Now, there's too many threes for my taste. I miss some layering. I miss mid-range jumpers. I like Chris Paul's game. I think it's a lot of fun. But it's interesting to watch LeBron in this. My takeaway was watching that video is 17 years, first time I've seen that. I mean, Michael was in dogfight constantly with the Celtics. Larry Bird was in fights with Dr. J. The Knicks were always in fights. The Pistons, the Lakers, there was tackling. And we romanticize it and do documentaries about it, but it wasn't very good basketball. It was inartistic. It was a, if you go back and look at the Pacers-Knicks series, the one they romanticized, Google it right now. For God's sakes, look at the number of free throw shots taken. It was just back and forth to the free throw line. It was awful basketball. Reggie Miller was fun. Spike Lee was entertaining. The basketball was awful. Reggie was one of the only guys that could shoot in the whole series. So I like the fact that LeBron is this new generation where not everybody has this massive chip. It's like hockey. They took out the mugging. Now the best skaters win. That's the way it should be. In basketball, we took out the fists and the this and the pushing and the... And the more highly skilled guys win. So it's like the NFL. NFL's done the same thing. Don't hit the quarterback. This is not a league about guards and defensive tackles. It's about quarterbacks and wide receivers. So I think sports, that's the one thing I like about sports. It used to be much more alpha, much more physical, much more punishing. But the other thing that's just smart business is, if everybody's tackling their stars in hockey, if everybody is throwing at their stars in baseball, if everybody in the NBA is slamming guys to the floor, stars don't last as long. They just don't last as long. Michael Jordan was worn out by year 14. He was done. LeBron's at year 17. He's still, when healthy, a top five player in the league. All right, good stuff. Trent Williams of the Niners and Mark Sanchez stop on by. If you're a valued customer, you deserve a simple gesture of appreciation from your credit card company, and that's why Discover matches all the cash back you earned at the end of your first year. Discover, exceptionally common sense. Learn more at discover.com/match. Limitations do apply. All right, all sorts of stuff. We'll keep you abreast on the Matt Nagy rumors. He denies them. A story out there, the Bears will fire him after the Lions game. He denies those. We'll keep you abreast. It's been fun today. Trent Williams of the Niners, Mark Sanchez, both around the corner as we pivot to hour three. Live in Los Angeles, it's The Herd.